Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode number four of our Smart Freight podcast series. As always, our podcasts are available to stream on and download on Spotify and Amazon Music and anywhere else you listen to your podcasts. I'm your host, Tash Jones, European Channel Manager at Smart Freight. So far, we've spoken about integration and automation, marketplaces, and we've also delved into the world of Sage ERP. Today, we'll be talking to Peter Ward, the CEO of the UK Warehousing Association. And Smart Freight have actually been fortunate enough to work with the UKWA for a few years now. We've attended lots of events, and it's an association we're really proud to be affiliated with. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome Peter onto today's episode. Hi, Peter, and welcome to the episode.
Yeah, hello there, and good to be with you today.
Brilliant. So, Peter, I mean, you're the CEO of UKWA. You've ran and attended your fair share of events, I think it's fair to say. I'm sure you've got some really great stories to tell. I mean, what event in particular to you sort of stands out and why, I guess?
Well, I guess the highlight for me, I've been in this role now 6 years, or just coming up to 6 years as chief exec of the UK Warehousing Association, and the highlight would have to be our event last year when we were celebrating our 75th anniversary. You'll remember we had our annual lunch and awards ceremony at the Dorchester in London. Those good days when we were able to have those big networking events. And of course, being our 75th anniversary, we were graced with the presence of Her Royal Highness, the Princess Royal, Princess Anne. So that was a tremendous occasion. And one or two of the little things that sort of still stick out in my mind was, Princess Anne presenting the award to the Young Employee of the Year, and all of the great words also that Princess Anne said, and the compliments that she made to this great logistics industry of ours as well. So yeah, a real highlight. And of course, you'll remember the other thing that we did last year that culminated at that event. We set a target at the beginning of the year, being our 75th anniversary, to try and raise as much money as we could to help our chosen charity, TransAid, and we set a very ambitious target, being our 75th year, to raise £75,000, which we actually succeeded in doing. So I guess the follow-up to the Dorchester event was again meeting Princess Anne a few weeks after that at the TransAid annual showcase, and actually presenting her she's the patron of TransAid, of course, and we were able to present her with the cheque for £75,000. So, yeah, all in all, last year was a real highlight and very memorable for me my board of directors, and indeed the membership of UKWA. And you'll remember that, Natasha, because we were very pleased to have Smart Freight as one of the main sponsors of the event as well.
Absolutely. We had a fantastic time at that event, and meeting Princess Anne was just such a privilege. It's definitely one of my highlights in my career so far. And I mean, to be honest, most of the events I've gone to that have been hosted by UKWA, I always have a really good time. So.
Yeah, great. Well, it's, we couldn't do it without the support of our associate members like yourself. So we don't take that for granted. And we really appreciate your support and the level of engagement that we have together.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the partnership we had with the UKWA and the activities we've run with you guys, it's just been an absolute pleasure, to be honest with you, Peter. Talking about sort of Smart Freight and UKWA, I mean, Peter, you've been working in the logistics space and warehousing now for quite some time. And as you know from conversations we've had in the past, I've been working in the logistics space myself only for maybe, say, 2 years. So it'd be really great to hear some of your thoughts on how the industry is utilising, or maybe actually in some cases not utilising, technology.
Yeah, well, you know, we talk about the logistics industry in that sort of rounded expression, but of course, you know, it's a very diverse sector. It's diverse in the number of, you know, sectors that it supports: manufacturing, retail, food distribution. I mean, it goes on and on. So very diverse in that sense. The other interesting thing in terms of diversity of the industry is the sheer size and scale of the different sort of organizations involved. You know, our membership probably is a good example. We feel that we have a good representation of the industry with some 800 corporate members here in the UK. But they range from probably a smaller number, probably 20 to 25 members who are the household names that, you know, you see their trucks up and down the motorways, and you see them on the television, you know, hoardings advertising all the big sporting events. I mean, you know, it's the DHLs and the Stobarts and the SIBA Logistics and the Kuehne+Nagels, all of those really big guys. They're all members of the association. And of course, you know, they have tremendous scale, you know, operating, you know, 20,000-30,000 employees from 200 locations worldwide. And then we go right down the kind of scale of our membership, where we've probably got over 100 members who are probably operating from a single site or maybe a couple of sites in the UK that might not be much more than 50 to 100,000 square feet. You know, typically owner-occupier businesses, sole proprietors, but, you know, real kind of SME, small, medium enterprise businesses. And you know, I really believe they are equally as important to the overall mix and the overall service to the economy as those big guys. So we have this kind of 80-20 factor in terms of scale and size. And then when we look at that in the context of the kind of take-up of technology, you know, there are always going to be leaders and followers. And I think, you know, it's probably some of those larger companies, because they have the depth of resource and the wherewithal, that are probably the, you know, the early adopters. And probably it wouldn't be unfair to say that probably the SMEs kind of get, you know, a little bit dragged along behind. And it's a case of, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, and having to sort of wake up and smell the coffee and get involved and start adopting technology. Now, that's probably a very generalistic view, because, you know, in that overall mix, there will also be, within that sort of leader-follower type of analogy, there will always be some of those smaller companies that get it and actually understand that they can make a tremendous difference to their business by making that investment in technology. So it's very, there's no fixed answer to that particular question. It's kind of horses for courses. It's probably driven to a degree by scale. The one thing that I would say, in sort of summarizing all of that, if we're looking back at the industry as a whole, compared to other industry sectors, overall, it's probably what you would call a kind of slow adopter, you know. And I mean, again, talking to some of those SME, mid-sized companies, you know, if I posed them a question and said, you know, are you embracing the best of technology? You know, they'd come back to me and say, yeah, of course we are. And when you dive in a little bit deeper, it's probably because, you know, in the last sort of 12, 18 months, 2 years, they've kind of come away from backs of fag packets and actually working their business on Excel spreadsheets. I'm probably being a little bit unfair. But just to make the point that I think, you know, the industry has got a long way to go to be seen as being a real kind of an adopter of technology. Sure, the big guys, you know, who are probably being driven by some of those big multinational corporations that they support, you know, again, without mentioning the names, but if you're supporting, you know, the inbound manufacturing process for Jaguar Land Rover, for example, you're going to be one of those big players, and it's only natural that you are going to have the technology in place to be able to do that. So probably being led to a degree by the larger companies, but very diverse, very broad church, and overall, I would say probably not the fastest industry sector to be realizing, you know, the benefits of technology.
Well, that's really interesting, and I think I can agree with my experience in the industry for the last couple of years. I think it is very mixed out there in terms of the technology adoption. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see sort of how things look, say in a few years' time. So, I mean, 2020 has been an interesting year for us all. I mean, in light of recent events that have taken place, I think a lot of businesses seem to be moving more towards e-commerce if they weren't already, you know, trading online. I mean, what opportunities actually do you think that brings to our industry, and in particular 3PLs?
Oh, I think, you know, it's it's phenomenal. You're absolutely right. It's been an incredible year so far. And I guess really what we've seen through the COVID pandemic is that actually it's kind of accelerated a lot of the growth, particularly in e-commerce that we were forecasting. I mean, the genie's out of the bottle now, isn't it? And it's not going back in. And really what COVID has taught us is actually many, many things. I find myself casting my mind back to our national conference that we held back in the beginning of March. It was just really, we were very lucky actually that it was before the real sort of seriousness of what the pandemic was going to be nobody had really realized. It was probably 3 or 4 weeks or 3 weeks just before lockdown. So we were lucky. We held our conference. We had 200 delegates there. There were only a couple of people that sort of decided that they wouldn't take the risk, probably a little bit more aware of what was coming than others. But anyway, we had a really interesting conference talking about the digital journey that the industry is sort of embarking on and so on. And we were talking about e-commerce. And actually, I was able to reference a report that the British Property Federation had just put out a couple of days before the conference kicked off, where they were forecasting the growth that was expected in e-commerce to be going from sort of 11p in the pound to 19p in the pound. And they'd extrapolated this into a requirement every year for the next 20 years of an additional 25,000 employees coming into the industry and a requirement for, you know, another 20 million square feet of warehousing distribution space would be needed in the industry every year for the next 20 years on that kind of 11 to 19p growth path. Well, if we now look at what's happened since March over the last 6 months, that 11p in the pound last year has actually gone in some, well, sort of on a national average to over 33p in the pound. So it's almost double what the BPF were forecasting back in March. And we're also hearing from some retailers that actually it's in some of their forecasting or some of their analysis over the last 6 months, it's actually exceeded 65p in the pound. 65% of their overall sales has been online business. So COVID has kind of blown away any kind of modest trends, ambitious as they were, at the beginning of the March. And we are now in just a completely different territory on this. So it's phenomenal, and the opportunities I think that you know are there now for our sector to embrace are absolutely incredible. I mean, I don't see retailers themselves wanting to invest in, holding stock in multiple locations. So it's all pointing to growth for the third-party logistics providers. The one thing that 3PLs do, of course, is provide these services on a shared user basis. And it's through the offer of that shared user kind of network that it's the 3PLs that can actually provide the flexibility and the agility in the supply chains that actually retailers particularly are going to require. I think the other interesting thing about this is that retailers generally they might not like me for saying this, but I mean retailers generally like buying stuff and selling stuff, and they don't particularly enjoy complexity. And when it comes to complex, it's the sort of area that typically gets outsourced. And this whole business now is so complex, and it requires such a level of flexibility, as I say, in terms of holding stock in multiple locations to be able to compete with Amazon to meet those sort of next day, same day kind of delivery cycles. Huge opportunity for our sector to step up and seize that opportunity. And I think, again, as I was saying, earlier, in terms of the diversity of the industry, we tend to think of this e-commerce, or have done historically, think of this e-commerce for largely non-food items. It's that kind of discretionary spend on all of those things that we want, for our leisure pursuits, or clothes, shoes, household goods, and so on and so forth. But the other thing that COVID has shown us now is that the phenomenal growth of the e-commerce offer and desire for it from within the grocery sector. And it actually, I think it proved at the beginning of lockdown, when we had all of that kind of panic buying and all the stories about the toilet rolls and everything else, you'll remember that you couldn't get delivery slots with the grocery retailers. Their infrastructure wasn't sufficient to cope with this growing demand. And their websites were falling over because they couldn't handle the volume of traffic through the website and so on. So it proved actually that the grocery retailers particularly were only really playing in this space. And of course, the other thing that we learned through this process, and I am mindful of, back to our conference at the beginning of March, we were all working on the assumption that this whole kind of growth of e-commerce was going to be driven by the millennials and the Generation Ys and the Generation Z. Actually, what COVID has brought about now is it's kind of made this e-commerce frenzy pervasive across all of society. And people like my mother at 90 years of age, fortunately she she has grandchildren that can show her how to do it. But, my 90-year-old mother is now buying her groceries online because she's in that vulnerable sector of society, and it's the only way she's going to get her groceries. So it's not just the young people anymore. It's the elderly that have joined the frenzy as well, and it's right across society. And the growth of the whole e-commerce phenomenon is just absolutely incredible, and it's going to present us with, I think, a number of great opportunities, but a number of challenges to cope with that exponential demand.
Yeah, no, most certainly. I think from what I've been reading and hearing from our friends in the e-commerce space and industry, the growth that we've seen this year is just, nobody could have forecast it. It's just unheard of. It'd be very interesting to see sort of what happens again moving forward. And I think it is great to see that actually out of all of this, some opportunity, there is some opportunity there for our industry, and also for new job opportunities for people as well. So I think it's definitely something positive we can take out of 2020.
Yeah, indeed.
Brilliant. So, we've talked a bit about sort of the opportunities that 2020 has just sort of generated. you did touch upon challenges there. It'd be interesting to get some thoughts from you on what you know, the pandemic and everything else that's happened, you know, what new challenges that might have surfaced.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, having said, you know, said that, you know, the opportunity, well, we're seeing growth in the sector. There's no doubt about it. And you just look at what the major real estate agents are reporting. You know, right now, the highest level of take up and transactions in the industrial and logistics sector in, you know, on record. And already by the end of September, you know, the record year of 2016 had already been sort of beaten, and there's still another quarter to go of all the deals that are in the pipeline to be completed in the final quarter of the year. So it's clearly, you know, a record year within the growth of industrial logistics, you know, infrastructure, if you like. The other interesting thing through all of those reports, and they're consistent, you know, all the sort of big five, you know, real estate agents are reporting the same thing. Interestingly, 21-22% of that take up is from the 3PL. So this, you know, the evidence is there that what we're saying is happening, you know, is backed up by some clear evidence. We've got getting on for a quarter of all that new take up through the 3PL sector. And then, you know, the other, out of the other three quarters, a good sort of two thirds of that is being taken up by e-commerce businesses or potentially retailers, you know, in the e-commerce space, you know, 25% of it just by Amazon alone. And of course, you know, you then ask the question, well, what is Amazon? You know, is it a retailer or is it a tech company, or is it indeed a, you know, a logistics provider? But that's probably a discussion for another day. So we've got the evidence that, you know, the industry is growing. In terms of the challenges around that, there are a number. I mean, first of all, it's just not that easy to bring logistics buildings up out of the ground as quickly as we're going to need them, and that's largely around, you know, policy around land use and planning. And of course, one of the challenges that we have in this great democracy of ours is, you know, in society we've all become accustomed to getting our Amazon delivery, you know, at 9 o'clock the next morning, and that's kind of become the norm now. And we all want that. And as we're saying, that, you know, the evidence is there that is just a, you know, growing part of our lives. But, you know, none of us want this dirty logistics business in our backyard. So we've got the NIMBYism factor to deal with, and probably, you know, we've got to somehow, through the devolvement of land use and planning regulations to local authorities, you know, we've got to find a way of promoting the logistics industry as a force for good, and having, you know, society realize actually that you can't have all of that convenience. And that convenience, of course, through COVID is not just a matter of convenience anymore. It's now a matter of safety and security. Coming back to, you know, my mother buying her groceries online. I mean, that's becoming a sort of safety, security and health kind of issue. The point is, you can't have all of that without actually having the logistics going on as well. So we've got to promote the logistics as a force for good, and see it as that. And local authorities, who largely, you know, are responsible for land use and planning within their own areas, you know, have got to be more proactive in terms of understanding the importance of logistics in people's everyday lives. And, you know, this is something that we within UK Warehousing Association have to spend quite a lot of time working quite hard at, because, you know, we're conscious that in planning departments, when they're looking, you know, to collectively deliver these government's objectives of building 200,000 new homes every year through the life of the parliament, you know, they put these schemes together and they think, right, we're going to do, you know, we've got this area of land, we're going to build some new housing on it, you know, we're going to have a school, we're going to have some hospitals, you know, but nobody's really thinking about the impact of logistics on that new development. And, you know, the point that we're making is, you know, 200,000 new homes delivered across the country. That's actually 200,000 new home delivery addresses that are going to be served, you know, by this frenzy of the people that live in those homes, you know, doing all of this e-commerce online ordering. So some big challenges around land use and planning and how we embed that, you know, into those processes. And that will help make the land available and build that infrastructure within, you know, all of the other infrastructure planning. So there's a big piece on land use planning infrastructure. The other key challenge that we have is actually bringing the people into the industry that the industry is going to need. You know, it's a labour and skills issue. And, you know, this has been kicking around for quite some time. And, you know, dare I mention it, it's been somewhat exacerbated by Brexit because, of course, you know, since the referendum, we've had this sort of what we call the Brexitus effect. You know, a lot of that Eastern European, dare I say, low-cost labour on which our industry has survived and to a point almost exploited for the last, you know, 20, 25 years. There's been a massive exodus of that Eastern European labour. So the whole skills and labour shortage issue, you know, has accelerated and become more prominent. Now we're, as a result of COVID, you know, we're working with the Department of Work and Pensions on various schemes like the Kickstart scheme and the upskilling schemes to try and get these young people that are becoming casualties in the hospitality and retail sectors, you know, the casualties, transferring their skills and coming into the logistics sector, because the sector needs labour. However, there's a big challenge for the sector itself, and that is improving the margins on which it works. Because at the moment, it's a very low-margin industry that's been very accustomed over many, many years to having low-cost labour. And, you know, we can do all the promotional activity we like to show that this industry is no longer about, you know, old boys in brown coats wandering around blowing the dust off the dirty old pallets and, you know, driving forklift trucks, you know, and show the youngsters, if you like, that this industry is about, you know, the robotics and the technology and the automation and everything else that you would see in, let's say, an Ocado or an Amazon warehouse. We can dress it up and make it really exciting and show it for the dynamic, high speed, high velocity industry that it is. But if at the end of the day, we don't have the wherewithal to pay a fair day's pay for a fair day's work, we're never going to make this industry interesting to those young people that are becoming available. So I think wrapping all of that up, you know, asking me what are the challenges? The challenges are about how, where, and how quickly through the democratic process we can actually build the required level of infrastructure that's needed. And then the second issue is bringing the people into the industry that, you know, that are needed. And, of course, part of the infrastructure thing is also about, you know, national grid and connecting power and all of those sorts of things. I mean, some of the crazy issues that are going on at the moment, we've got some brownfield sites where, you know, they've gone through all of that planning treacle and they've actually got planning permission to build B2, B8, you know, logistics kind of buildings. But there's a 12-month waiting list to get electricity connected. Well, you know, that just isn't good enough, is it? You know, we've got so much to do in this country in terms of, you know, getting our heads around fast delivery of infrastructure. So it's about infrastructure, power, and people, really, the key challenges.
Yeah, that's really interesting insight. I think sometimes as a consumer, you do sort of think, well, you see like vans, parcel vans, like going out delivering, and you kind of don't take a second to think, well, you know, the demand is now is much higher than it was, and so how do we cope with that? And it's interesting to hear that, you know, we are looking at things like trying to bring people into the logistics industry, because it's actually, like you say, it's very high tech, industry when it needs to be. And it's a very, I actually think personally, it's a fun industry to be in as well. So yeah, it'd be really cool to see sort of more youngsters coming into the space for sure. Cool. Okay. So I think, you touched a little bit on, the environment, and the needs for things to be more sustainable. I mean, I think climate change has been, all over the media, especially this year, and last year. And we're really seeing evidence now, of climate change with things like the fires in Australia, and now in America. Do you believe that climate change will impact how we operate in the logistics space in the future?
Yeah, I do, very much so. And I think, you know, again, the logistics industry is a great example of you know, where there are many opportunities to do things, more efficiently. And again, you know, we talked about this back in at our conference in March, but I think, unfortunately, due to COVID, in some ways, you know, it's kind of slipped down the agenda as people's minds have been on other things. But at the same time, you know, it's probably accelerated, some of the issues. And I think, you know, another challenge for the industry in dealing with this is how much the industry can do itself without, you know, any kind of government intervention. And I don't think everything in terms of addressing the climate change agenda is going to happen just by leaving it to market forces. And one thing that really concerns me, in the context of our conversations today about the growth in e-commerce, is the sheer volume of, you know, white vans running around sharing the same sort of tarmac. I look out of the window here, working from my home, and I see several white vans every hour, you know, coming onto our little estate, you know, dropping all of these Amazon and everybody else's orders off at people's front doors. That can't be right, and that can't continue. But I don't see how it's going to change while it's just left to market forces. And I do think at some point in the future, you know, again, whether it's central government or local authorities or a combination of the two, but I do see this situation coming where, you know, we're probably going to have super logistics centres on the outskirts of, you know, major kind of consumer conurbations and a kind of franchise arrangement where a single company, you know, does the milk round, like the milkman used to do, does the milk round of deliveries in given geographic territories. Because the current practice of all of these vehicles running around doing all of these e-commerce deliveries clearly isn't sustainable. So I think once we get through the worst of COVID and we get this pandemic, I mean, I'm not sure whether it's ever going to go away, but once we get it to a level that we can manage it and learn to live with it, and we do go to whatever that new normal situation is, I do think that, the climate change agenda is going to come back to the forefront. And, you know, when you look at the, you know, logistics is all about moving stuff, isn't it? It's, you know, whether it's the big trunk of vehicles, you know, up and down the motorways between the hubs, and they going into, you know, the platooning and the electric vehicles and all of that, that's, I guess, on drawing boards at the moment, right down to this final mile of, you know, e-commerce deliveries. There's a huge amount that the logistics industry will contribute to addressing some of those climate change challenges. Absolutely no doubt about that. It's just a question now of how quickly it comes back onto the agenda, I think.
Yeah, no, most certainly. I think you're completely right there, and certainly seeing some carriers and logistics firms looking, starting to make some changes. So it'd be really interesting to see what happens with all the major sort of parcel and pallet carrier networks sort of in the future. I like the idea of having somebody doing local drop-offs for different carriers and things like that. I think that's definitely something I think we'll probably hear more about in the future, because I think you're right, the way maybe we do things right now isn't the best for the planet. So
yeah, and of course, you know, the more it just adds another level of complexity, and that level of complexity is going to be driven increasingly by adoption, adaption, and deployment of technology.
Yeah, absolutely. With anything along those lines, it's very much sort of using your data in the right way, and having good structures in place so that you can manage it, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant. Well, thank you ever so much, Peter, for being on today's episode. It's been a real pleasure.
No, thank you, Natasha. Thanks for the invitation. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And again, as I said at the beginning, it's great to have Smart Freight and the Wise Tech Group as real good engaged partners of UKWA. We look forward to continuing our great relationship.
Most definitely. And I certainly, for one, am looking forward to the next physical event we can come to.
Yeah, let's hope it's not too long before we're all, back at the Dorchester, sharing our experiences and our best practice, because it's certainly more enjoyable than the current environment of the virtual world, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely, 100%. So, yeah, once again, thank you to Peter. And if you've enjoyed today's episode, please stay tuned for episode number 5, where I'll be talking to Big Commerce and finding out all about the changes we've seen in 2020 in the e-commerce space. But for now, over and out, and thank you very much for listening.